Want to learn how to see and share Jesus from all the scripture? Learn with us at the Christ Centered and Clear podcast. Welcome to the Christ Centered and Clear podcast. I'm your host, Nate Aiken. I'm joined today by my brother, John Aiken, and also Josh Redberg. And today, we continue our series on the book of Hebrews, looking at the priesthood, primarily coming out of Hebrews chapter 8. John, give us just a little bit, as we set the stage for what's going on in Hebrews, give us a little bit of Old Testament background on the priesthood, just some key themes, key chapters, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so the main thing is you have the children of Israel coming out of slavery in Egypt, and then you have the creation of the tabernacle and the glory cloud of God literally descending down on the tabernacle. He's going to take up residence in the Holy of Holies. And so there's this massive question of how does a sinful people live with a holy God? And in order to do that, there has to be sacrifices that are made, atonement has to be made. In order for a sacrifice to be made, somebody has to be making the sacrifices, which is the priesthood. And so the end of the book of Exodus is the creation of the tabernacle. They build the tabernacle out. And then they're trying to answer this question, how can holy God live with sinful people? The book of Leviticus starts, and the first several chapters of the book of Leviticus is laying out the different types of offerings or sacrifices that are going to be made. And then you have laws and policies and procedures concerning the priests who are going to be the ones who are making those sacrifices, so that the priests are the ones who are going into the tabernacle, who are making these offerings, so that sinful man can approach holy God. And so they're the mediators between the people and God. They are all to be from the line of from the tribe of Levi, and then even in Numbers it gets into more of the duties that they're doing in the camp. They're the ones who are posted around the tabernacle as guards, and then everybody's like a couple of football fields away in terms of the different tribes to keep people from approaching God in a way that they're not supposed to, so that the holiness of God doesn't just strike out and consume the camp and all those things. So they're the ones, they're the mediators, and they're the ones who are trying to make sure that man and God can live together.
Josh, what do you think the Old Testament priesthood, as we get to Hebrews and we're going to think through what's happening specifically in 8, but what is that sort of trying to prepare us for? And then again, what's the author of Hebrews trying to illuminate for us?
Yeah, I think one of the things we see is that the Old Testament priesthood is primarily about failure. It's our failure to live with God. So it has its roots, as we talk about all the time, in Genesis 3, mm-hmm. But it's all about failure. It's walls, it's obstacles, it's uncleanness. You're unclean. You've done something, you've touched a dead body, something as simple. As much as these weird laws about excretions and bleeding, it's just all about failure. And even the priests itself, they're failures. So they're told, for your own sin, you first have to do this before you can go in on behalf of the people's sin, and make sure to do this because you failed to do that. It's a system built around human failure. Mm-hmm. And I think then what he's going to do is, when he's talking about how much better Jesus is, Jesus is the first priest where the system's not built around failure, but around success. And so he makes this point in a couple ways here. He's talking about how Jesus serves in a better place and Jesus gives a better promise. These seem to be the two areas he focuses on. So he talks about, this true tabernacle is not on earth. It was never on earth, because earth is not the dwelling place of God. God is in the heavens. How many times, we even talked about last week, the Lord Most High. God's dwelling is not on earth, and so a physical building on earth is never where God was. Yes, God came to meet with his people, he descended, but that's never where God was. And so having a priest who's actually in God's presence is much better than having a priest who can enter this one part of a human building where God descends from time to time. So a better place, but then really he goes into a better promise. And he's talking about Jesus as a priest of the new covenant, and these other priests were priests of the old covenant. And this really is where the whole Old Testament led, is that there is the need for this new covenant, a type of covenant that is transformational, unlike the old covenant. And so then really, Like, I feel like his discussion about the priesthood is really, in one sense, a longer preamble to the new covenant, that the old priests serve the old covenant. Jesus, as a superior priest, serves the new covenant, and the new is so much better than the old. And so that's why he ends up really contrasting the covenants as he continues in chapters 8, 9, and 10.
John, talk to us then about the covenants a little bit. So he says at the very end of this chapter 8, in the speaking of a new covenant, he makes the first one obsolete. There's obviously a ton of controversy and even just a lot of questions about continuity and discontinuity between the old covenant and new covenant. But help us think through, particularly in light of Hebrews 8, how should we see the covenants in relation to each other, but then also why he would be saying of this new one is making the old one obsolete?
Yeah, so I want to be clear that there's a misunderstanding that people have sometimes where they think the old covenant was about obedience and saving yourself through obedience, and the new covenant's about faith, and that's not the case. Okay, that's not what it's always been about. Grace through, you know, grace and faith has always been how anybody can come. That's why there's sacrifices in the first place. That's why there's atonement being made. Okay, because of what Josh is pointing out. He keeps using the word failure. I wonder if that's because he's so politically correct, he doesn't like the word sin. I think it's clear atonement needs to be made. Okay, so that's not the issue. It's not obedience in one and then faith in the other. The issue is the old covenant was never meant to be permanent, and it was never meant to stay in place. It was always pointing to something else, to something better, to something greater. It was a shadow of something that was going to come that was greater. And then here's what's better about the new covenant. Okay. So like it wasn't that the old covenant itself was bad. It's that we were sinners. That the issue with the covenant is they're the ones who betrayed God. They're the ones who were unfaithful to God. Okay, it wasn't that the covenant itself was wrong or sinful. It was temporary, but the new covenant, and this is just really foundational stuff. Okay, the new covenant that God's making now, instead of the law being written on stone tablets, it's going to be written on the heart. Okay, so this is talking about the need for new birth, that you need to be regenerated, brought from death to life, in order to be able to live a life that pleases God. Okay, so the law being written on their heart, I'll be their God, they'll be my people. And then this one that gets people kind of, you know, tripped up sometimes, they shall not teach each one his neighbor and each one his brother, saying, know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest. It's not saying under the new covenant that you don't need teachers, you don't need preachers. What it's saying, know the Lord, it's talking about evangelism. Inside the new covenant community, everybody is a believer in the Lord. Under the old covenant community, it was possible to be part. This is where our paedo-Baptist or our friends, I think, get it wrong. Under the old covenant, it was possible to be part of the covenant but not be a genuine believer. He's saying in the new covenant, that's not going to be the case. That everybody who's part of this covenant has the law written on their heart, has a personal relationship with the Lord, and has had their sins forgiven. That's what the new covenant is, and so it's a better covenant because of that, because all of these things are now a reality. And so I think he's just saying like that. Why would you go back to something that was wonderful for what it was intended to be, but was not sufficient and was not permanent? And now you have the permanence. You have personal relationship. You have the full forgiveness of your sins. You have the law written on your heart so that you can, it's not just over on some stone tablets that can be destroyed. And so now you're able to obey out of what God has done from the inside out. And so that's why it's far superior. So don't go back.
Yeah. I love the point John made about I think it's verse 11, where it talks about each person will not teach his fellow citizen, but each will know the Lord. Right. It's not saying, as John said, that there's no need for teachers, but we don't have a need for priests and prophets, and we don't need a mediator between us that ministers in God's presence on our behalf. I mean, that's what the old covenant, you can't miss that as you read the old covenant, is you can't go there. Don't touch that. You'll die. Like, somebody's got to go do it for you. And that there it's saying, like, not anymore. Jesus did it. Now you can do it. You sort of picture life in the old covenant as life in a village that only has one well. And only a few people can draw water from the well. They're the only ones allowed to do it. So anytime you need water, you got to go to them. They'll share it freely. The priests were there. They would, you could go to them, but this, it's slow. It's difficult. Maybe you feel thirsty all the time, but feel like you can only get water once in a while. And the new covenant is like Jesus goes up in the mountains above that village and he levels a ridge and all of a sudden the river flows through the village and everyone can take their own water bottles there and drink as often as they want. Like there's this freedom to enjoy God, a freedom to actually be in God's presence in the new covenant that was simply not there. I mean, just if you're unsure about how wonderful this is, like spend some time reading in Exodus through Deuteronomy.
Yeah,
that's why this is so worthwhile. You want to love Jesus more. You want to be excited about what it means to be a Christian this side of the cross. Like take time, you know, take a couple months and read through those verses and you'll see like life, God was gracious in what he did. That's why the old covenant was a blessing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's just nothing at all like what we experience now. I mean, it's the difference between, you know, a tricycle and, you know, and a Learjet. Like if you can ride in the one to go somewhere, why would you ever use the other? And so I think maybe if we struggle with appreciating what Jesus has done, it stems at least in part from our failure to spend time reading what was enacted before Jesus came.
I think this is getting at why we would even want to do something like Christ-centered and clear. I mean, what you just said, Josh, even some of the stuff John talked about in the conference we had a few weeks ago, the writer of Hebrews is helping us understand in a kind of a penultimate way, an ultimate way, what is the Old Testament is driving us to. And so if you read some of those old, you read some of the stuff with the Pentateuch and you see how this is culminating in Jesus, it is kind of, again, the kind of the Emmaus Road experience, right? Our heart's not burning within us when we see this.
Yeah.
These are also key passages for us, as John pointed out, who are Baptistic. Like we obviously believe in a regenerate church because of what things like Jeremiah 31 and now in Hebrews 8, it's saying. We think old, and to some degree in the old covenant, you got in by generation. In the new covenant, you get in only by regeneration. Mm-hmm. In the old covenant, to some degree by birth. In the new covenant, only by being born again, by a new birth. And so these all culminate That'll in preach. The work. Yeah, these culminate in the work that our high priest has done for us. Give us just as a last question, give us some applications then. How do we, you know, why does this matter? What do we kind of take away from this for our people?
Yeah, I think so. For, I mean, the way that the book of Hebrews is applying it, obviously. So one, it's there's salvation in terms of he didn't have to make sacrifice for his own sins, but he's both the priest and the sacrifice. He ever lives to make intercession for us. And so the application is clear, draw near to God. And so you have to Josh's point, we don't have to fly, book a flight, fly to Jerusalem and go to a temple in order to come into God's presence, to worship him, to ask for help when we need help. We have immediate access whenever we want it. And we have it now through a better high priest and through a better covenant. And so why not draw near and take that access? The other for me is really like assurance of faith, because the whole idea of like that what everything that needed to be done to accomplish your salvation has been done. He made the sacrifice, he went inside the veil. And then he sat down. No priest ever sat down before. He sat down because his job was finished, and you now have full access, and you're fully in this new covenant that was promised years and years ago. You're part of this end time new covenant that's been inaugurated, and so for me, it's a lot of like draw near to God and assurance mm-hmm. of salvation.
Yeah, I think one of the things we have to understand is, you guys ever get that longing for the good old days? And usually when we long for the good old days, it's because there's something hard that we're facing right now. And when we long for the good old days, we think only of escaping the hard thing. We don't actually think honestly about what it was. Like I remember, you know, whenever I have car trouble, my tire blew out on Sunday night. And so I spent all day Monday trying to get new tires, which are crazy expensive. And So I long for the good old days before there were cars, because I'm sure having a horse was so much better. you know what I'm saying? Like you can be like, man, it had to be easier before cars. It's like, yeah, except for you couldn't go anywhere and your vehicle literally could die in front of you. You know, so I think sometimes, like, we have to understand these Christians were in some ways longing for the good old days, and they're thinking only of escaping difficulty. And so one of the things he's doing is like, yes, there's some difficulty that comes to you to follow Jesus in the midst of a culture that's opposed to him. But let me remind you of the blessings. And the blessings of following Jesus far, far surpass any difficulties. And that's a reminder we need. It's when life's hard, we want to run. We want to run away from the difficulty. But if we run away from Jesus, we run away from everything. And that's what he wants to impress upon them. If you run away from Jesus, you run away from everything. You're going to run back to something that's so, so weak, so inferior, so obsolete compared with what Jesus has done. So in your desire to escape, don't escape from the one in whom all blessings flow.
Yep. The high priest who's not unable to sympathize with us in our weakness. Good stuff. Well, thanks for listening to the Christ Centered and Clear podcast. Next week, we will pick up the theme of the tabernacle, and so we hope you'll join us then. Thank you for listening to the Christ Centered and Clear podcast. If you have questions, topics, or texts that you'd like us to consider for future podcasts, please contact us at podcast@christcenteredandclear.com, and please visit us at christcenteredandclear.com for more resources that will help you see and share Jesus from all of Scripture.